he displayed a commitment to nonviolence in his relationships across the board, including with the farm workers and Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. Your book notes that Dolores Huerta said that when Bobby Kennedy showed up, he didn't come to us and tell us what was good for us. He came and asked two questions. What do you want and how can I help? How important do you think Bobby Kennedy's relationship with the farm workers was to their movement and to expanding the concepts and dedication to nonviolent resistance in the culture of standing up for our rights and advancing social progress in this country?
I think it was really important. It was extremely important to him as an individual and as an elected official. But in talking to Dolores and others, and we went up, a number of members of the Kennedy family and myself and some others, to be with Cesar Chavez on a subsequent, his last fast, in fact. And so I had the opportunity to discuss those earlier events with the folks there who had experienced it. And it was extremely important for the farm workers, as it was for the Native American communities on the reservation with whom Robert Kennedy visited, as it was for the rural poor, whether in Appalachia or in the Mississippi Delta or in upstate New York, where similarly Robert Kennedy went and by the force of his celebrity compelled the television cameras to accompany him. That was an essential element of how he was communicating, how he was learning personally, and how he was trying to bring that learning to others. He was a very visceral human being, and he found that he learned the most when he could participate in other people's lives by directly going to where they lived and by asking the questions that you mentioned he asked of Dolores. That was his working assumption and kind of his behavior in all of these. And the point was to try to understand. And then to use that understanding and use the attendance of the press so that his fellow Americans could understand how the most desperately poor and marginalized among us were living. And the theory was, and I think he proved it politically by the coalitions he was able to weld together, the theory was all of us have the same human aspirations, personally and for our families. And if we had the capacity to understand the circumstances that other people were operating under and the impediments to being able to achieve those aspirations, we'd have an awful lot more empathy for one another. And that would lead to the sort of collective action that was going to make change. This also came, I think, fundamentally from how Robert Kennedy thought about what it meant to be an American. He said to the Citizens Union in New York City in December 1967 that it is not easy to know what the term American means. But in part, to be an American means to have been an outcast and a stranger, to have come to the exile's country, and to know that he who denies the outcast and stranger still amongst us, he also denies America. That is a realization of a third-generation immigrant reflecting on what his forebears went through and what the common story of all Americans, with the exception of Native Americans, have gone through. But it was also a broader recognition of what gave America motivation, energy, and potential through its history, and the reason why each of us have to understand what the life of the outcast and stranger amongst us that forgotten America is.
And how shameful it is, like, to take those words and apply them to what is happening in our country today with ICE and deportations and proactive policies to rip families apart, to take children away from parents. This is why people are wanting to protest every day on the streets. This is not our America. This is not that America that Bobby Kennedy spoke to and was calling us to our better angels about.
It is not. I don't think that those approaches are at all consistent with America, and I don't think that they're consistent with most American voters' interests or beliefs. There are always conflicting trends in American history where those who are looking for power, campaigning for office, make a determination if they want to appeal to our fears and concerns, or they want to appeal to the better angels of our nature. Essentially, are you trying to reconcile the community and the nation, or are you making a power calculation that you're best off sowing division and being able to pick enough votes up to get into office on that basis? But again, I think Robert Kennedy, and this goes back to the toughness point, would have understood many of the pressures that are leading Trump supporters and other Americans to be concerned about the change around them within their own lives, the necessity to control immigration on some basis that is effective. And by acknowledging those threads and those desires, I think that you can then come up with both a comprehensive policy solution and point people to the elements of the way it's currently interpreted, which cannot square with their own sense of how you treat human beings.
Mm-hmm. You're so on point with the soul force politics approach that, yes, we can be fired up, frustrated, angry at an action that is being taken by this current administration that is counter to our values as Americans, and want to do everything we can to protect immigrant families who are being treated so harshly and unfairly. And we are called to understand what is the underlying force that allows that message to have resonance with other people who are living in our country and are having a different set of experiences. And we don't get at transforming that just by fighting against the policy or winning a new election and putting in a different set of values. We have to get at those underlying motivations, experiences, those threads, as you suggested Bobby Kennedy was so good at tying together. He said in your book, I want to read one quote that I think is also very reflective of our current times, and maybe you can walk us through what kind of insight this can leave us with for 2018. I said that this generation grew up in an age of instability and flux. From one viewpoint, this is the worst of times in which to live, a time of anxiety and doubt and danger. But from another viewpoint, it is a time of great stimulation and challenge. It is a time of motion, when society is cutting away from old moorings and entering new epochs. It is a time that offers opportunity for initiative and ingenuity. It is a time that transforms life from routine into adventure. The adventure of change may be a tragic adventure for many, a sad uprooting of cherished customs and institutions, yet change is one constant of history.
It's absolutely a fact and an important observation for all of us. These seem to be extremely unstable times, and Americans are not especially good at looking at our own history. We're still a young nation. We each of us face enough demands on our time and attention, just making a living and making a life, that we don't read broadly about our history or many other things. And so it's relatively easy to have fears, which many of us would hold in common, become the motivating force rather than more positive emotions that are going to yield a better life for ourselves and for others. And so trying to argue that the forces of change are not destabilizing and concerning flies in the face of the reality that each of us know. The question is, how are you going to react to change? Because you're not going to put your fingers in the dike. And the opportunities that technology presents to us can be for good or for ill. Changes in our media and the way we consume it, again, have no determinative force behind them. They're tools to be used. And really what we have to rely on in the end are human connections and human emotions. I think each of us has to understand within the context of our own daily lives and our relationships that when you proceed from fear and anger, whether as an individual or as a community, the results are catastrophic. And so is it not better to try to bring facts to bear in an effort to understand the truth and a path that leads to something that is not only good for you, but good for others, because on that basis, you're much more likely to lead a happy life.
What would you say love has to do with that, right? Because it's not just about choosing not to have fear and anger. It's about making the opposite choice of that, which is love and big-heartedness. You know, Kennedy was known to be both hard-headed and big-hearted in his approach to the world.
Robert Kennedy spoke at the very beginning of his presidential campaign about the need for love and compassion towards others as the principal driving force of his candidacy. And that's language that is seldom used today. I think, again, it came out of his times, but it speaks to us in ours because it touches on the strongest of human emotions. And it contrasts most directly to the sorts of forces that were destructive then and are destructive now. We've talked about the fact that his notion of love was not a soft one. It was one that acknowledged differences, that believed in unfettered debate, that did not start with an assumption about what solutions would be, didn't reflexively reach either for the private sector, the public sector, or individual action, but tried to understand how those three elements could be welded together to make change. But overall is love, as the scriptures say. And that was the sense that he brought to what he did. Love of country, love of community, love of family, love of oneself, and love for a broader set of ideals that recognized that every American and every human had the opportunity, should have the opportunity, and has the right to participate in making a life of value for themselves and for others. And so really what America has been about throughout our history, I think, is what are the structures that can make that process work? How do we have every member of the American community valued, incorporated into the life of creating the nation?
I feel like my new answer to people who say, tell me more about what is Soul Force Politics? What are you trying to do here? I feel like my new abridged version of that answer is for you to find the Bobby Kennedy that is inside of you.
I really believe so strongly in that. You know, we talked earlier in the show that many have talked over the course of these 50 years of trying to pinpoint who the next Bobby Kennedy is, that singular leader that can represent the unusual amalgam that he presented of passion and impatience and commitment. I think that is the wrong question. And I think Robert Kennedy would tell us the wrong question. And I think you've posed the right one. How do we access within ourselves and with those around us, how do we access the principles, the vision, the drive that he possessed and recommended for us?
Thank you so much for your time here today, Rick, and for the exhaustive research and dedication to this work that you have put together to share the senator's words with us. These are important times for us to be revisiting the brilliance that he gave this country, the path forward, the inspiration to view things from a larger perspective that can go beyond just policy solutions, but reconnecting us to each other across all divisions and how to make this country live up to all of the values that it aspires to be from the beginning, and that's at the root of how we protect and maintain this precious democracy.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your consistent service over a long period of time and then all of the various roles that you have undertaken. And thank you for this extraordinary podcast, because it really gives all of us the opportunity to think more about these topics.
Beautiful. Well, let's leave the listeners with Bobby Kennedy's own voice in that speech you so beautifully outlined for us in Indianapolis on the night that Martin Luther King was assassinated.
I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country, in greater polarization, black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God. What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black." We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness, and it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. And what dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.
I believe if I look hard enough, I will see.
And that wraps up for us this edition of Ms. Maryland, Soul Force Politics. Ms. Maryland is a fire starter for social justice warriors. Soul Force Politics is a new movement of people willing to cast aside the warning labels that caution us against blending our politics with deep internal wisdom. Our spirit empowers us, connects us, and stokes the passions of our hearts. Our political discourse desperately needs the guidance, strength, and clarity of our soul's force for good in the world. Using our inner wisdom to guide our external actions, that's Soul Force Politics. You have found your tribe, and we will feed your fire.
A woman can work hard and succeed, and we could be content to believe she could be in charge of the free and be the president. If not now.
Be sure to join our community and never miss an episode by subscribing to this podcast on your favorite podcasting application and visiting our website at www.MizMaryland.org. Next week, join us as we connect with one of America's top humanitarians, Chef Jose Andreas. He isn't only a famous celebrity chef with amazing top-tier restaurants to satisfy your culinary desires. He is also the leader of World Central Kitchen, a nonprofit organization that has fed millions in the wake of disasters that range from hurricanes in Puerto Rico and wildfires in California to volcanic eruptions on the Hawaii Islands. His work, his life, and his dedication to the wellness of others is such an inspiration.
I believe that we are waking up from the spell that those that profit from the fear cast so well. And good people of the earth now can tell there is no us in them, if not.
So until next time, I'm Heather Mazier, encouraging you to be the change you want to see. Create the world you want to manifest. Break through the illusions of impossibility. Live your life's purpose with clarity, intention, and truth. Choose only love. Be one.
people, for the people. Truth is of the people.